Here we are at the April 11th, 2020. Did I say April 11th? Yeah.
Yes.
April 11th, 2024 meeting of the Science Fiction Club. Yeah.
And I
All
think you
right.
should go first, Evan, because there have been a couple times where you didn't get to give a
get to
book at
go,
all.
exactly.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Well, you can be short.
I can be short.
Yeah,
well,
I
this
mean,
book,
there's
well,
no
see,
rule.
I've read a few books lately, and I'm of two minds about mentioning this, but I mentioned that one of my favorite authors of all time passed
Vinci.
away on the Science Fiction Club list, and nobody responded. And I felt
Yeah, Werner
hurt.
Vinci.
Yeah, he
oh.
was one of the best. He was
I don't
one
know
of the
if I've
best,
read by him. I know
in
I've
my
read one
opinion.
by him, and I've read
He's won like three or four Hugos.
I read
He
The
won
Winter
a bunch
Queen
of.
by his wife, Joan.
Yeah.
I read The Winter Queen. I never did get to The Summer Queen, which Bard does have, though it doesn't have The Winter Queen because that was on records. And then there was a short story that supposedly connected the two that I never could find.
I didn't like her as much.
She's more fantasy in a way, I think.
Yeah. I read some of her stuff. I think I read The Snow Queen. I think that was
Yeah,
one
it
that
was
I read.
about this planet that used this stuff from these animals, or sent, you know, intelligent animals to for the rulers to stay young or something. It was strange.
But he did.
You
but
liked
he
him.
always acknowledged her at the beginnings of his books. He always
Oh,
acknowledged her. I think she helped
wow.
him. He didn't say exactly how, but he always acknowledged and thanked her for helping. You
Wow,
know, because
nice.
I don't know if he was as good a writer in many senses, but he had a lot better ideas,
Maybe
in my
she edited
opinion.
or something. Yeah.
Yeah,
he may
she
have
might
he, she
have.
may have read his drafts and made suggestions and stuff that, you know, that's probably what happened. That's what I'm guessing anyway.
The name on the
But
author.
but he got a Hugo for A Fire Upon the Deep,
Ooh.
and he got a Hugo for Rainbow's End.
No Nebula.
And
what's
what did
that?
you say, Martin?
No
I was
Nebula.
Asking the name of the author again.
Werner
Vinge.
Vinge. And Bard has most of his work. They don't have everything, but they have all of his most famous work.
What's the first name?
Vernor. V as in Victor.
Oh, V. Okay, I've heard it. V as in boy. Let me go back.
And I think he got a Hugo for A Deepness in the Sky too, but I can't remember for sure. But that was kind of a sequel, not a sequel exactly, because it didn't go on from where A Fire Upon the Deep left off, but it was in the same universe. So, but Bard does have a lot of his stuff. They have the collected stories of Werner Vinge, which has most of his short work in it. There's a couple minor omissions. Well, True Names isn't in it. That's a major omission, but Bard doesn't have that at all. You have to get that from Bookshare. I remember I borrowed that from Carnegie Mellon University Library, had a copy way back in the 80s.
Wow.
And I borrowed it and read it with my Opticon because I
God.
Did not have a scanner at the time. So,
well, you were
it took
pretty
me
good
a while.
To read that with an Opticon. That is not
Yep.
the easiest thing to do.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, I really wanted to hear about it because
you
that was
must
back
have.
when he published two great novels in analog back in the 80s. He published The Peace War in 1984, and Bard has that, only the reader isn't as good as the one that read the analog version. It was Merwin Smith read the analog version.
Oh, he's I miss him.
I miss him too.
He
was
he was
one of
my
the
favorite.
Best. He was a pro.
He
he
was,
was
my
really
favorite
good.
Narrator because he was
And
understated.
yep. Well, he didn't read all of it. They actually the first part was read by a different narrator, but the second novel he published in analog was Marooned in Real Time, and Merwin Smith did read all of that in the analog version, but they had Bruce Hunty reading it, and he's not bad, but he's not Merwin Smith, but he's not bad. But
too bad they didn't keep the tapes and just put it all together, instead of making him read it again.
Yep. They had to do that, apparently. Maybe there were copyright issues or something.
Maybe,
they
maybe
didn't have
that.
Permission to. That was probably it. But anyway, so when I read Peace War and Marooned in Real Time, and I heard about True Names, and I decided to go get it. And that was one of the first. It's a novella. It's not a full length novel, but and you can get a copy from Bookshare in the collection True Names and the Opening of the Cyberspace Frontier. It has. It was one of the first ones. He didn't call it cyberspace. He didn't quite have William Gibson's gift for great naming, but he was there before Gibson. And he had people, mentally interfacing with computers and stuff. But he had people using like armies of computers, and battling against people and stuff. It was really, really good. In the 90s, Bard did Fire Upon the Deep and A Deepness. I didn't know they did Children of the Sky until just a bit. I did that one for Bookshare too. That was set in the same universe as Fire Upon the Deep and A Deepness in the Sky. But A Fire Upon the Deep was my favorite. I can't remember. I have to go through. I thought we might have done that many years ago here. That was about the zones of thought, where you had the more dense parts of the galaxy were slower mentally. They couldn't go. They could not climb to as high a mental acuity as places further out where matter was not as dense. So you had like the slow zone. And you had the unthinking depths, which was near the center of the galaxy where the big black hole is. Then you had the slow zone. Then you had beyond. And then you had the transcend, where post-singularity entities lived. But A Fire Upon the Deep was about this malevolent entity that got woken up by these people. Oh, you have to read it. It's fabulous. But and I wasn't planning to review it here because... I read another book that I was going to review.
Did you ever get the Andromedan Dark, the third one? Weren't you getting that on Bookshare? Or he hasn't done it yet.
It's not out. No, oh, okay. It's not out. I would do it if it was out, but
keep us waiting for years.
I know. I'm still waiting
when they do that.
That's for people who don't know. That's Ian Douglas's. Andromedan Dark is a series that he did that goes into the far future.
Yeah, it is.
He's ostensibly a military SF writer, and he does have a good bit of military, but it's better than like David Drake and David Weber and stuff. He has, at least in the ones that he did, like the Star Carrier and the Andromedan Dark, he had really, really high tech, stuff going on in his books. So David Weber and David Drake were kind of like, I don't know. They had higher tech than we have, but it wasn't like anything like this. Now I'm not sure what I should talk about because I was talking about Werner Vinge, but I'm going to keep it short because I've already been talking and I don't want to be filibustering through the whole meeting.
Oh.
I started and I'm halfway through the second book of the Night's Dawn trilogy, Peter F. Hamilton's Night's Dawn trilogy. There are three books, and they're all very, very long. The first one is called The Reality Dysfunction, and it is 41 hours and 10 minutes. The second one is called The Neutronium Alchemist, which is 40 hours and 25 minutes, I think, or something like that. And the third book is called The Naked God, which is 48 hours and something. Wow. Can't remember exactly. But, I'm really enjoying it, but there are some caveats, which Sherry may wish to chime in and mention at some point. but you might be pleased to know, though, Sherry, that if you get past... If you get into the final quarter of the first book and then go into the second book, the amount of sex goes down quite a lot. I don't know if he got too much criticism for it or what, but I'm getting ahead of myself slightly, but I wanted to mention to you because even people who gave the book 5 stars complained about that.
Oh.
And but it drops off quite a lot in the last quarter of the first book, and the second book has, you know, very little. I'm halfway through the second book.
That's about how far I got, was halfway through the second book, and then
No. You only got about 3/4 of the way through the first book.
Okay,
remember
I'm
you
not
read
remembering.
Those. Okay, I have to explain the publishing history of this a little bit, because the books that are on Bard are the 3 books as they were originally published in England, and they are over 1,000 pages each. Now, when they were published in America, each one of those was broken up into 2 volumes of 500 or 600 pages each.
Okay.
So when you read them on Bookshare, you read the first half of the first book and then like the second half of the second book of the first book, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They gave them separate titles, you know, like, you know, the reality dysfunction, expansion, and reality dysfunction, emergence, or something like that. I forget what they were. But Bard has them in their original full length. And John Lee reads them all. David, if you're interested. He reads all 100 and whatever it is, 29 hours of it. So, but what I was saying is, it's about this, it's about 2650, 2675, something, I forget the exact date. And there's a confederation that is out in, you know, that has settled a bunch of worlds, and there are a few aliens here and there, but they're this one colony that's on this world called Laland, and he tells you quite a lot about the colony. And I think one of the reviewers might have been accurate when he said he thought that Hamilton spent a lot of time telling us about how the people built the colony so that it, when it gets destroyed, you feel it more. You know, you're not going to feel it much if you hear, well, there's this colony on this world that just got splashed, you know. But you know the people, a lot of the people in it. And, you know, so it's more poignant when, but I'm getting ahead of myself again slightly. So you've got this colony, but you've got this confederation, and you have multiple plot lines. There are several of them because it's a, you know, it's the 3 books, it's almost 130 hours to read it all. So it's a big canvas, and Hamilton is good at this. He, you know, he did Pandora's Star, Judas Unchained, you know, the Commonwealth Saga, and those are really big. Void Trilogy, each of those isn't quite as big as these, but they're still pretty big. He's good at telling a long story without it seeming, you know, padded too much. But okay, so you've got these colonies, and you've got of a lot of different characters on different worlds, and he switches back and forth between them. But there are some pretty bad characters in here. There's a guy who gets sent to Laland, the colony world, because he is a bad guy. He worships something he calls God's brother, which is understood to be Satan, but I looked it up on Google, and I never saw references to God's brother as Satan on Google. But it's supposedly what it refers to in this book. So anyway, you've got these colonists on this world, and you've got you know, people in other some of them are not on worlds. Some of them are on like these you know, like O'Neill colonies, or just big asteroid, you know, inside of asteroids and stuff. And there are some different cultures. Their two main cultures are the Edenists and the Atomists. The Edenists have like this affinity. They can communicate with each other psychically. They've got genetics. He doesn't explain it in detail. I don't know how it works exactly, but science fiction has a long history of psychic, you know, stuff. So he doesn't really dwell on the mechanisms too much, but they're much more empathic, and they're, you know, the culture is very healthy. It looks like, and it's very balanced, and I really like it. It's very imaginative, you know, and they've got, you know, they have a lot of genetic engineering and stuff, and they, you know, they grow their ships. Their ships are actually grown. They have minds, you know, and they empathize with their crew. They communicate directly, you know, mind to mind with their crews and stuff. And then you have the atomists that are more like regular people, like of today, only they have implants, most of them. He calls it neuronanonics, which I think is a little clunky, but that's what he calls it. And it's similar to Edenism, but it's not the same. It's not as empathic, and it doesn't control the ships as well. But they have some, you know, serious differences. You know, some people don't, you know, have religious differences, and some people just, you know, grow up into different cultures. They get along for the most part, though. So you have these two cultures, and so there's this company that sends people to Laland to colonize, and it rains a lot. The weather's bad quite a lot of the time. And this is going to take a few minutes. Let me think if I can. There's an alien, which he starts with in chapter 2, that has evolved. And he goes through the history of it. I think it's one of the best parts of the book because it's really imaginative, but he doesn't stay with them too long. But he tells us about these aliens that have evolved over, you know, thousands of years, and they've kind of become incorporeal, and they go out and travel throughout the galaxy. Ooh. And so they appear on land, and there's this Edenist, there's this Satanist guy, Quinn Dexter's his name. He's one of the colonists on the land. And he starts recruiting people, and they start terrorizing populations. And there's some brutal scenes in here. I can't deny it. You've got to get it's not so bad later on, but early on, there's some stuff in there that, and so these aliens who are traveling through the galaxy come to Laland, and they're just exploring and stuff. And so they're noticing that this guy, these people, these Satanists are torturing this guy, and they interact in such a way that they open this continuum. And now here's where it gets a little bit, now this is something I'm willing to accept for the sake of the story, though I don't really think I believe in it, but apparently there's an afterlife where these people are, you know, people go disembodied into a continuum, and then they don't get any sensory feedback, and they're starved for sensation and stuff. So they open up this continuum, and he calls it a rupture at one point. And these disembodied beings from the past take over and possess people. Really? And because they have this door into the continuum where they were, they have certain powers, and they can mess with electronic equipment. They can change their appearance. They can, you know, issue white fire from their fingers, you know, and they're very, you know, they have a lot of, so, and they're different. Not all of them are bad. Some of them are, you know, there's like, you know, but most of them, you know, they want to possess people because they want to come back to life, or they want a new life. So so the Satanists, you know, Quinn Dexter has recruited these people, and he starts spreading. The problem is, and he doesn't show this too much, he doesn't show it in graphic detail most of the time, but when he gets people to try to possess them, they have to be he tortures them, and so they hear these voices telling them they'll help them, you know, they'll set them free. And then they enter their body, and they take them over, and then they're possessed. But the original psyche is still there. It's just like pushed under. So it's a little goofy, but so now I'm skipping ahead a little bit because there's a lot of story. So they start spreading, and the Confederacy has to figure out how to stop them because they're taking over. You know, they've gotten on board some starships. They've taken over the colony on Laland, and, you know, because they've been spreading. And, you know, Quinn, you know, he's kind of one of their leaders, and he's very powerful. He's, you know, he really believes in this stuff, and he wants to spread, you know, he wants to make other people, you know, possessed and stuff. And so they get off the planet and they start spreading to different other planets in the Confederation, and now they're trying to stop them. And that's basically a lot of the story, but there's a lot of subplots and there's a lot of different characters. As I said, you see them on different worlds, and some people get away, and they're actually, some of the possessed actually help, you know, some of the people. Like there's one that's helping some of the characters from a world that's like old England. It has colonies, you know, that are like, they're not retro. I mean, they have a lot of technology and stuff, but they're settled by English people who like their English life and stuff like that. And so not all of these possessed are bad. Even though they're possessing people, they're still trying to help, you know, people escape from them and not be taken over by them. So I'm halfway through the second book, but I'm not halfway through the series yet. And of course, we know they're going to be stopped at some point, but I don't know how. They actually have the plots on Wikipedia. You can read them. I actually did read them, but I don't remember them. It's been a while. I mean, I don't remember all of it. I don't remember how it ends, really. There was a complaint. There were complaints about the first book because there seemed to be quite a lot of sex in it. And he defends it. I saw him. He was in an article in, I think it was the Guardian newspaper. And he, you know, back in the 90s, and people, he said, you know, I know a guy that does chick lit, and they really have a lot of sex. Science fiction writers are Puritans by comparison. So he kind of doesn't think it's a big deal, but apparently he must have listened to somebody, because he really does cut down on it later on in the first book. And in this second book, there's not really very much at all. And I'm already like 20 hours into it. It's occasionally referenced, but very seldom. So that's the basic plot, but there's a lot to it, because, you know, I mean, there's some really descriptions of different worlds and different colonies, and you hear, you know, how the Edenist culture is really developed and how the starships grow. And there's a lot of imagination in it. And, you know, it's a really big canvas with the different plots, you know, because it's so long, you know, there's a lot of different plots that, you know, he tries to help you keep it straight. He does make references to previous events sometimes, but there's a lot to keep track of. There's no doubt about that. But I'm overall, I mean, I have to suspend my disbelief just a little more than usual, because I don't really believe that this afterlife exists, you know, where people are. And now that this continuum rupture has occurred, you know, the people who are in this continuum who are dead, you know, they know, you know, that they can get back, and they really, really want to get back into a living body. So they are like really, and they don't want to give it up once they have one, and they fight. But apparently there is some kind of a resolution to it. In about another 60 hours or so, 68 hours or so. So maybe in the next few months, when I finished it, well, I don't want to spoil it too much if anybody wants to read it. Of course, the narrator is really good. His name is John Lee, as I mentioned.
He does
all of them. He's very good. But as I said, there's a lot of different characters, a lot of different plots. But I like it quite a bit, because these possessed don't have it all their own way. You know, I mean, there are people who fight them. There's this one Edenist colony that got taken over by this guy. What happens is when people die in the Edenist colonies, their memories get transferred to the ship personality. So, you know, the ship personality still, you know, gets bigger. So it's a very empathic culture. It's a really admirable culture in some ways. I really like his creation of that. But there's a lot of brutality. There's quite a bit of brutality in it too. I mean, it's got a lot of different things in it. It's really well done, in my opinion. As I said, I have to suspend my disbelief just a little more than usual. But I'm still enjoying it quite a bit, though. I'm hooked. I'm going to finish it. So I'm halfway through the second book. That's the Neutronium Alchemist. Bard has them all. If you want to get started on it, give it a try. But just try to be patient because there's really is too much. I mean, there's this one guy who's a starship captain. And
we
he
choose that
really,
book
he, what's that?
Should we choose that book to read together?
No.
No, it's way too long. It's way too long for a club reading.
And
for
y'all
a month.
Did Great North Road by him anyway.
We did Great North Road by him. Yeah,
in
that
the
was
past.
Actually
that was
long, was
long
it
enough.
It was long enough and shorter than this. It's 41 hours. The first book is 41 hours. But it was. But they're over. But just if you get tired of it, just skip over. But this, you know, he's like he does everybody in sight practically in the first book, but. I mean, he's having affairs with multiple people and they all know about it. You know, it's like, they don't care. It's a real libertine culture, you might say, but he really tones it down later on in the first book, like in the last quarter of the first, and then the second book, there's not that much of it, at all. So I think maybe he got too much pushback, but even people who give the book 5 stars complain about it, which tells you something. About the first book.
Well, it
but
kind of gets repetitive. I mean, how many
does,
sex scenes
yes,
can you
does.
Write that are
it
creative?
Does.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, but if you're patient enough, you'll get past it and you won't have to worry about it, you know, in the second book or even in the last quarter of the first book. So the Reality Dysfunction, the Neutronium Alchemist, and the Naked God are the 3 books in the Night's Dawn trilogy. And I'm glad Bart finally got them.
Yeah.
Bookshare had them, but I just wasn't quite ready to read them yet. But Bard, I can read audio a little bit faster, you know, and John Lee's a great narrator. I mean, mm-hmm. He really is good. He does different accents and, you know, different voices, and he's really, really good at it. So if you want something really long, you know, that's pretty imaginative, and if you can suspend your disbelief a little bit about the afterlife thing, give it a go and see what you think. It was really popular, I guess, back in the 90s. So that's what I got. How much time did I take? Gee, I was on here a long time.
Long time for a long book. So
yeah. Oh, it's 9:36. Oh my
that's
God.
Good.
What are you guys doing here? You didn't
Mine
shut me
won't
up.
Take long. No, we were enjoying it. Mine
yeah,
won't take
no,
long
that's
anyway.
Fine. I mean, like we said, you didn't even get a chance to talk
no.
the last couple of times. So yeah.
So we're glad now you have.
Hey, is somebody having a problem with their connection?
We don't know what that is. It was
I'm
there
not sure.
from the beginning, so we don't know.
All right, Dave. David, do you want to do something?
Yes, you mentioned David Weber. Well, lo and behold, Bard had the Janus file by David Weber and Jacob Polo on not long ago, and I read it. I didn't realize it's actually book number 3 in the Guardian Division series, so I went to Audible and grabbed the Guardian Division, and then a friend had the Valkyrie, I'm sorry, the Guardian Protocol, which is the first book in the Guardian Division, and a friend had the Valkyrie Protocol, which is the second book, and shared it with me, and Bard just got book number 4, so Bard has done book number 3, and they just did book number 4, the
wow.
Valtal file. So the first two books, what you find is you're taken to the world of the 30th century. There are two universes. The first one is the system government, and the other one is the administration. And it deals with timelines and people traveling back in time and universes calving off other universes. It gets a little overly complicated, and I didn't understand some of it. They could go back in the past and observe history and do things and change things. And it was also how they had spaceship things that traveled in time, so you could do that. And it just talked about how they were in the first book. They found out that there was a universe that needed to die, because if it didn't, there was a tangle of 16 universes, and one had to go so that 15 could live. And it was how that was plotted, and how they went back in time. The second one is similar to that. It's another universe that has to go, The world building is what I liked about it more than all this temporal engineering. In the world building, they're a lot like us, but the big thing with these people, especially in the system government, is they can have their brain scanned and their connectome, and they can have that put into a synthetic body or in the computer. It reminded me a lot of Altered Carbon by what was that man's name? Richard Morgan.
Morgan, Richard Morgan.
Yes. And it also reminded me a little bit, what was the other book? Wait a minute, no, why can't I think of the other book I wanted? Oh, a short story by James Patrick Kelly, something about a dinosaur where people were scanned and the scanning pattern was beamed to wherever the planet they wanted to go, and a new body was created for them. But the machine that had blasted their pattern out destroyed the original body because you couldn't have two people in this short story, except in the short story, of course, something goes wrong and they do. But this idea of the connectome and people's pattern traveling and then is put into a synthetic body is in the story. And then there's some people who never go to a synthetic body, they're an AI intelligence that lives in the virtual world. That part was kind of interesting. The Janus file might be the easiest to understand. It's a police procedural in this same universe, as are the next three books, because there are six novels. Bard has three and four. I presume since the first two were read commercially, Bard could get them because the third and fourth were read by an NLS narrator because they are not available commercially in audio form, which I thought was interesting. Weber is awfully long-winded and has so many, the Honor Harrington series and so many, and he's co-written a lot of things with people. I remember Eric Flint, and he did the 1632 series. I thought about reading the first book, and then when I looked, that series is enormous, and it has offshoot series and other books in that universe. I don't know if I want to climb that mountain. I wish they would do a few standalone things. It's nice to have a series, but it can be rather daunting sometimes if you come to it instead of wait every year reading the next one. If you find out about it and you have 15 novels to read and each one is like 30 or 40 hours, it's almost not worth it. It's just
So, did you
overwhelming.
read Altered Carbon?
Yes, and I read the second one. They were
I was going to
strange.
read it, but I gotta admit, I was going to read it, but it sounded too dark.
They
Is it
they are a
pretty?
bit they are a bit dark, and so are these Guardian Division books. Weber is dark because I've read some other stuff. One was The Empire of Man. It was a series of four novels where this Empress Prince had to make his way across a hostile planet, and almost all of the people with him die even by the sea.
Well,
Yeah, they're dark. He can be violent and dark.
it sounded pretty imaginative, the Altered
They
Carbon. It's pretty far out, it sounded
It
like that. I
is.
thought I might like it, but I didn't know if I wanted to get through all the what sounded like it was going to be pretty brutal and,
It's a mystery. I'm like a murder mystery, but
Yeah.
they are dark and they can be. Now, I've never read Honor Harrington, which David Weber also wrote that whole series. Some people like it. I've never ever read it, but I had heard, it's space opera basically. He seems to like the space opera genre because that's what most of his stuff is. It has enough technology to be interesting, but it's a lot of battles and people dying and a lot of it's not what I normally read, but it goes fast.
Well, okay. What was that again? Just for people who might be listening. What was that one again?
The one on Bard is there are two on Bard, books three and four. The first is the Janus file, and the second is pronounced the Weltall file, though it looks like Weltall, Weltall. But the author, the narrator kept pronouncing it the Weltall file. So I guess he did research. The first two books are available on Audible. I'm sure Bard will get them soon because they are commercial. They'll just have to adapt them the way they do.
I want to get Martin in here because
Yeah.
he usually has something.
He does.
Okay. I'm going to play the introduction. The book is called Mr. Spaceman. Let me get
I wish I knew who was having a. So that's
I
going to be hard
know,
to
I know.
listen to for people.
Hold on. by Robert Fulton Butler. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not. And
Nope.
let me go to the library. Let me see if I have. They go to the library, you know, the Congress, Library of Congress. Okay. Here goes the description.
A friendly extraterrestrial.
No, it's breaking up.
That's not coming through. Okay.
Yeah, I think you. I think I. I don't know. Maybe Martin. Maybe that's your connection that's making the static. Yeah, it's all breaking up.
Any way of knowing? Should I go out and try to come back in again, and someone else can talk in the meantime?
Oh, it's working now. Give it a go.
All right. Well, let me describe it to you. It's a cute book. It's narrated by this spaceman who is sent from a distant planet to make contact with Earth in the millennia, in the year 2000. And he's been observing the Earth for 100 years, trying to absorb the culture, the languages, and all that. So when he's getting close to the year 2000, he decides to capture. There's a bus going to a casino in Louisiana. I think it has 17 people, and he beams them up onto a ship. In the meantime, he has married a typical Southern woman from Alabama who's a down-home type person. She was a hairdresser, and they meet, and she accepts him, and she's been living on a ship. So when he beams all these people up, she cooks for them, makes these down-home Southern meals and everything. And he's interviewing all the different people to try to get an idea of what Earth is like. So when his mission, as I say, is to go down on New Year's Eve and present himself and let Earth know that they're not alone, that we're not alone, that there are other civilizations out there. And he goes into depth, the different characters. There's one woman there who thinks he's Jesus Christ. She's constantly bowing down to him and everything. And and he puts them to sleep, you know, when they're not talking and everything. So finally, the time comes when he has to go down, and they recommend he was going to go to New York, but they recommend that he goes to New Orleans and goes down into the French Quarter in a year, just at the millennial. So he's dressed up with a zoot suit and all this fancy stuff, and he brings his ship down and goes down right into the middle of the square with all these thousands of people. And it turns out that no one pays him any attention. They think that he's just another dressed up person. So the book finally ends when he sends his ship back and says, come back in 100 years when they're more ready to be notified. And he goes to live with his wife in New Orleans in a little in the French Quarter, enjoying a quiet life.
Wow.
Okay. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. But I
don't. Oh, good.
I read it a while back, and I went back over today to try to refresh my memory a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of depth to it. Some
good.
Spencer's, you know, one black guy describes, you know, growing in Chicago and all the racial problems he had and everything. So there is quite a bit of depth to it, as I say.
Yeah, well.
And humor, too. The accent, you know, his wife is really cute in a way. She's always making his fancy down-home dishes to give feed to the people on the thing. And when he's finished, before he goes down, he sends them all back. He says goodbye to everyone, and then many of them have really become very close to him, and everything. Sends them back, and the bus is landed right on just where it left off, so they continue on to the casino.
Ah, okay. Mr. Spaceman.
Right.
What's his name? First name?
The author?
Yeah, Butler.
Robert Olin.
Butler, I think. Let me go back and get it.
We'll make sure so people can find it if they want to check it.
Let me see where I am. Hold on.
Go to page. Go to heading. Go to time. By Robert Olin.
Robert Olin Butler.
Oh, okay. I forgot there were three names.
Right.
All right. Okay. We got it.
Very good.
Robert Olin Butler. I ain't never heard of him.
I don't know if you have any other books on Bard. I don't even know who recommended the book to me to begin with, but I like those kind of quirky books.
Yep. Well, we've been talking about some heavy books, so like in the last half hour, so.
Yep.
Sherry, did you?
Yes, I'll be real quick here. I want to mention Far from the Light of Heaven by Tade Thompson, and I do not recommend this book. Started it, and it sounded interesting. That's one of these typical people are going into outer space, and they've been frozen and all this, and when they wake up, there's 31 people dead. And after about 3 hours, I really didn't care who did it, and so. So I went on to something better. You guys have probably already read this, but I had never read it. It's Songs from the Distant Earth by Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
And I liked it. It was good. You know, you guys already know what it was about and everything. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was about
these but the people listening might not that's know. True. Maybe you can give them a little bit of a.
Yeah, there's an Earth ship from Earth that goes to this planet called Tanison or something like that. And it's a planet with a very small landmass. It's mostly water. People are quite happy and content. One of the things I thought funny was they elect their president by lottery. And anyone who wants to be president is not considered eligible.
Right.
That was interesting. And a lot of people,
I think Plato said.
Yeah.
He said people who want to be shouldn't be in power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so a lot of people on the ship are frozen, but the people that aren't come down, and there's relationships between them and the natives. And some of them decide that they kind of want to stay. And all they really came there for was to get a bunch of ice from the frozen parts of this world. And then they were going to continue on to where they were destined to go. And there's just a lot of relationship kind of stuff. And you get to know people. And it was good. So that's really all I have to say about it.
So you found something better after,
yep. Yep, the, after worst the first thing. One. Yep.
Okay. Who else is here? Are we Roger? Just the only one? Where's Roger? I don't hear Roger.
Was he here in the beginning?
Was he?
Yeah, he was here.
There he is.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Do you hear me?
We do. But we're hearing a lot of static, too, and I'm not sure if it's who's it from.
Right.
Are you still there, Roger? Uh-oh. Oh, we've lost our.
Should we talk about the next book until he gets back?
Yeah. Do you have an idea?
No, I recommended the last one and it was bad, I wasn't going to try again.
You're in the doghouse.
Yep. I'll wait a couple months.
Not really. Well, I still think that I would like to read that Clifford D. Simak book that we talked about reading a few months ago, and we decided to do. What was it? We did a different book, not the Black Sun. It was before that. We had another book that we were going to do. But the one from Clifford Simak was, Time is the Simplest Thing.
Is the simplest thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Time is the simplest thing. We were going to, I mentioned it. It's only like 7.5 hours or something like that.
Yeah, let's go
hours.
With that.
It's on my phone. We read a different book, and now I can't remember what it was that we read. But we talked about doing it before. And
you think we can get the number of the book?
Probably, yeah. Hold on here. Let me see if I can do it. I don't think it should take too long. Hold on here. Can you still hear me?
Yep.
Oh, good. I'm talking. Good. I can just set my phone down somewhere and talk into it, and you can still hear me. Oh, I have my ear pods on.
Oh, yeah, you essentially have a very good quality phone.
Yeah, I have an iPhone 13 mini.
Okay,
let's see here.
Or if not, we can just write down the author and spell that incorrect, and I can look it up afterwards.
What was that?
I said I can just write down the name of the author and then look it up afterwards, or the title. Sometimes when I try to look for books, I have difficulty finding them.
Hold on, I'm putting in the name of the author here because I didn't have it. Hold on, I got to wait for the Bard site to wake up.
Sure.
Wake up. There we go.
What date was the...
Wow, there's quite a lot of them.
What?
Here it is. Time is the simplest thing. And here it is.
Okay.
DBC.
I wonder what the C is for.
That means it's a local narrator.
Uh-huh.
So it's a production of Texas State Library.
They're not the greatest of readers, but at least of those that
DBC
I've
read. DBC 18639. Yeah, they're not always the... somebody from, I think it was Texas or somebody did a collection called Science Fiction for People Who Hate Science Fiction, and they did a really bang-up job. I'm not sure that this narrator's quite up to that. I started this book a while ago, and then I got into some other stuff and didn't finish it. But
can you give me the number one more time?
DBC 18639.
Oh, no. Okay, I didn't get to 9.
3, 9.
Okay.
9.
We'll look it up.
Without setting foot on another planet, people like Shep Blaine were reaching out to the stars with their minds, telepathically contacting strange beings on other worlds. But even Blaine was unprepared for what happened when he communed with the soul of an utterly alien being light years from Earth. After recovering from his experience, he becomes a dangerous man. Not only has he gained startling new powers, but he now understands that humankind must share the stars. Hunted through time and space by those he used to trust, Blaine undergoes a unique odyssey that takes him through a nightmarish version of a small town America as he seeks to find others to share his vision of a humane future. Blaine has mastered death and time. Now he must master the fear and ignorance that threaten to destroy him. That's it.
Can you give me the title one more time?
Time is the simplest thing.
T-I-M-E.
You want to do that one, or do you guys have another idea?
Sure.
It's not long.
S-T-T-H-I-N-D.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, definitely. Let's go with that one.
Oh, it's 8 hours, 0 minutes. So it's an easy one to finish for us.
Right.
We'll have no trouble with that. So, we'll do that one next month. And then in June, of course, it'll be back to your own books. So, all right.
Very good.
Did Roger? What happened to Roger? He never gave us a book.
No.
He's listed as unmuted. Are you there, Roger?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I heard him, but then we lost him.
Well, he'll have to do one next time, I guess.
Well,
I think
it's 9:57.
Yeah, it's almost time to go.
Yeah, we might have to hold up. I took too long with the reality dysfunction. Oh, well, we were talking about Werner Vinge at first, too. And
yeah.
I was really happy to do that because he was so awesome. I just thought he was one of the best. I'm
going
to happy to devote some time to
Roger. I'm going to check and see if I...
What's that?
I'm going to ask this question. If we're going to go to the bar and go into the category of science fiction, of course, they're in alphabetical order, so to try to find a book, that would be rather a daunting task, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Sure would.
If one were to go into the Bard's classification, science fiction, to try to find a book.
Oh my heavens! Yeah, that wouldn't be the way I would try and do it. That would be very daunting. You're right. But David F. has. All right. I guess I am going to now say, unless anyone else has something. What's that, Roger?
I'm back.
He's back.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I actually, for a moment, for a little, at least, well, twice there, I lost internet connection entirely. But I've been tracing wires and all sorts of things trying to get back, but here I am. Are you just to close up everything?
Or what?
Yeah. I don't know if you heard our next book, Roger.
We're going to go back. We're going to go back and try to do the the Clifford D. Simak book that we talked about a few months ago. And I forget what we did in his place. I just got to go through the recordings and it'll be there, but I don't want to do it and distract from the meeting, but it's called Time is the Simplest Thing. It's about a guy it's about these interstellar explorers who don't actually go anywhere, but psychically they go out and commune with aliens. And apparently he's acquired some powers. He found an alien and now he's being pursued by people who don't want Earth to find out about them. It sounds pretty interesting. The narration, we're not sure if the narration is going to be great, but because it's done by Texas Regional Library, but it won't be like insurmountable, I don't think. I'm looking forward to reading it. So we're going to give it a go.
Yep.
And,
okay. All right, we'll say goodbye then.
You all have a good month.
See y'all next month.
No, bye.
I better say that the next meeting of Science Fiction Club is going to be on Thursday, May the 9th, 2024.